Welcome to The Inquiry on the BBC World Service with me, David Baker. Each week, one question, four expert witnesses, and an answer. In February this year, El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele, won re-election with nearly 85% of the vote. His flagship policy has been the mass arrest of thousands of alleged gang members.
We think that the total incarcerated population of El Salvador is approximately 105,000 people, 1.7% of the Salvadoran population.
The roundups have been hugely popular with El Salvador's people, and neighbouring countries are taking note.
In Chile, for instance, Bukele polls more favourably than any of the country's politicians and even the Pope.
But critics say following Bukele's example could threaten democracy across the continent.
He has steadily dismantled all our democratic institutions in a very short time. When there are no more limits to a man's exercising power, we are rapidly becoming a one-party state.
So in this episode of The Inquiry, we're asking, will neighbouring countries follow El Salvador's lead on crime?
Part 1. President Nayib Bukele.
Our first witness is Carlos Dada, director of El Faro, an online newspaper based in El Salvador. He says Bukele came to power in 2019 thanks to people becoming exhausted by the two political parties that emerged after the end of the country's 13-year civil war in the early 1990s.
1992 marks the birth of our democracy, and since then all the political system have been ruled by the two extremes, the extreme right, which was Arena Party, and the extreme left, who was the former guerrillas, FMLN. Both the right and the left won the presidency at some time, and they both proved the same enormous capacity for corruption. People were completely frustrated by politicians that were not solving their immediate problems, but they were very corrupt.
Bukele's skill, he says, was to present himself as someone who recognized that frustration and could do something about it.
And so this guy comes and tells everybody, I am gonna revenge you. I'm gonna take revenge on behalf of you against those who stole the money to solve your problems. Everybody was fascinated with a young politician that spoke a different language, completely different from the Cold War era politicians that ruled the country. And people just bought it.
And he combined that promise with a genius for getting his message across.
Nayib Bukele is a young man that comes from marketing and advertising world. He's the king of TikTok, the king of YouTube, and he knows how to get attention. During his first appearance at the United Nations General Assembly, he walked up the podium. He took out his phone and took a selfie of himself. And then he went to the microphone and said, "This selfie that I just took is gonna be looked and shared by way more people than any of the speeches pronounced during this General Assembly."
And he says he's not afraid to use that bravado even against his more powerful neighbours.
He's the most popular president in all Latin America and one of the most popular presidents in the world. When the United States was very critical against him because he was already dismantling our democratic institutions, he declared himself the coolest dictator in the world.
That control of the narrative, he says, has stifled debate and freedom of expression in the country.
We have surrendered all our public life to a single person and his entourage, which is Nayib Bukele. In a democracy, we expect a free exchange of ideas. That's why I am particularly, as a journalist, very passionate about this, because we can't just have a single narrative of our national public life dictated by the presidential palace.
And combine that with the fact that Bukele has a supermajority in the country's legislature and has packed the judiciary with his own supporters. And Carlos is worried about the future of democracy in El Salvador.
He has steadily dismantled all our democratic institutions in a very short time. Just to give you an example, his recent re-election. Our constitution firmly, clearly, literally prohibits re-election, and still he was re-elected. What I mean, David, is when there are no more limits to a man's exercising power, we are rapidly becoming a one-party state.
Part 2. Bukele's crime crackdown.
We also know that massive numbers, tens of thousands of people, are being held without charge for months, up to a year or more, and then many are waiting years for trials of any kind.
From the start of his presidency in 2019, Bukele has waged what's in effect a war against the country's gangs. Our second witness is Catherine Saunders Hastings, a lecturer in Latin American studies at the University of London's Institute of the Americas.
El Salvador, throughout its post-war period, had very elevated homicide rates. And most of these murders are related to the presence of street gangs. In 2016, El Salvador had a murder rate of 106 per 100,000 people. And that made it the most murderous country in the world.
Much of that violence, she says, was the result of gangs fighting for territory, especially in poorer parts of El Salvador's cities.
People will speak of shootouts at any time of the day or the night, that it does then become extremely dangerous to leave your house, to attempt to go to work, to attempt to attend school.
And as well as the threat of violence, gangs extorted money from the residents of the areas they controlled.
Anyone from an ambulant vendor within a market, someone trying to sell tortillas out of her home to make a little extra money, anyone who is known to have a steady job might be expected to pay a tax to the gang. And if you resist those payments, you then essentially face a choice between extremely brutal violent punishment or fleeing the neighborhood.
It was this dire situation for many of the country's citizens that Bukele came to power promising to resolve. But for that, he needed extra state funding to strengthen the country's military, something he achieved in early 2020 through a very public show of force.
Around the 9th of February 2020, backed by soldiers in uniforms, carrying rifles, there is this incursion by Bukele and his supporters into the National Legislative Assembly in order essentially to intimidate legislators into supporting a proposed loan in order to better equip and arm the security forces. And so this is the point at which waging this war against the gangs becomes a key signature of Bukele's administration, but also the point from which dissent from these policies becomes characterized in his government's publicity and his political rhetoric as being very much treason against the Salvadoran public, that essentially if you oppose his policies around crime and security, you're necessarily allied with defending the gangs and betraying the Salvadoran public.
Even with that extra funding, gangs continued to exert control over most of the country. One estimate is that 40,000 people were in gangs, out of a population of about 6 million. And things came to a head in March 2022.
Over the course of one weekend, from Friday the 25th of March to Sunday the 27th, a really shocking tally of 84 murders within that 48-hour period. And it's at this point that Bukele declares the state of exception, which is the direct translation from Spanish, or the state of emergency. What the state of exception does is it permits the suspension of certain constitutional liberties and certain elements of the rule of law in El Salvador. It suspends various legal rights, including the right to habeas corpus, including the right to legal counsel. It extends the period of time that someone can be detained and held without charge, and a lowering of the age of legal responsibility to 12 years old from 16, where it was previously.
The result of all this has been a mass rounding up of pretty much anyone the police suspects of being involved with gangs.
We think that the total incarcerated population of El Salvador as of December 2023 is approximately 105,000 people, which is a huge proportion. 1.7% of the Salvadoran population currently in prison. It is very hard to say with much detail what the actual situation is regarding the due process or lack thereof that people detained under the state of emergency are undergoing, because there has been no public or press access to virtually any of the trials of the alleged gang members. What we do know is that in July of last year, there was a new law passed which permitted mass trials of up to 900 alleged gang members at a time.
Many of those arrested are being held in a new supermax prison that Bukele ordered to be built deep in the interior of the country.
The supermax prison is often referred to in El Salvador by its Spanish acronym, SICOT, which translates into the Terrorist Confinement Center. It's announced in July 2022. The government acquires a site about 75 kilometers south of the capital in essentially scrubland, a very rural agricultural area. And out of nothing, this mega prison is built and is opened at the end of January 2023. So in just a number of months, it kind of appears out of nowhere. The first transfers in of prisoners were highly publicized, with videos of the prisoner transfers being released on the presidential Twitter platform. They're quite glossily edited videos with, you know, a dramatic soundtrack showing essentially hundreds upon hundreds of alleged gang members who have been stripped naked except for white basketball shorts. They're barefoot, they've had their shirts removed, and they all have their heads shaved, crammed very close together, forced to sit nearly naked on cement floors, being sort of frog marched with their hands chained through their legs, is very much about kind of advertising the government's capacity to enact a sort of collective revenge upon these kind of boogeymen of the Salvadoran public. It's very easy to be critical of these policies from the outside, but the impact that these gangs had on life in the neighborhoods that they controlled was horrific. It is not entirely surprising that people are willing to tolerate quite a lot of abuses if they believe that they are going to see an end to the rule of these gangs.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Part 3. Bukele beyond El Salvador.
Bukele's crackdown has proved hugely popular in El Salvador. But how's it being seen in the wider Latin America region? Our third witness is Will Freeman, Fellow for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York.
Well, I think political leaders are jealous, frankly. They see Bukele's sky-high approval ratings, and they want that in their own countries. You're seeing in Chile, for instance, Bukele polls more favorably than any of the country's politicians, and even the Pope. In Ecuador, he has outstanding poll numbers as well. Several talk about copying his tough-on-crime methods. You've seen Honduras' president, for instance, say she'll do much the same. The mayor of Lima, Peru, saying that he wants to copy Bukele's moves. So really, his appeal is spreading far and wide.
And what about the populations of those countries? Are they thinking, you know what, we'd like a leader like him too?
Oh, absolutely. I've heard that everywhere I've been in the region recently, from Colombia to Guatemala to Ecuador. They want the security that they see Salvadorans benefiting from today. regardless of how El Salvador got there, it's now one of the safer countries in Central America.
And he says crime is rising in many countries in the region.
In Ecuador, absolutely. This is a country that just 5 years ago had a murder rate of around 6 out of 100,000, similar to the United States. And this past year, it rose to a murder rate of 45 out of 100,000. So one of the highest in Latin America. In Mexico and Colombia, for instance, the rate is around 25 out of 100,000. And that's devastating.
The reason those figures are on the up, he says, is because the drug trade is changing.
Latin America's drug trade used to flow overwhelmingly to the United States. Now, more and more, we're seeing drugs, especially cocaine, flowing to Europe and Asia, where there's ever larger demand. So traffickers can't rely on the same routes that they've historically used through Central America and Mexico. Instead, they more and more need to smuggle cocaine into long-distance freight ships. So they're taking control of ports in countries like Ecuador, Peru, Chile, Uruguay. And that's driving an associated spike in homicides in those countries.
So will other Latin American leaders be able to copy Bukele's approach?
I don't think so. There are just several factors that make El Salvador very, very unique. Its gangs were never as wealthy or well-armed as those in neighboring countries. It's not a major country for drug trafficking, so the source of revenue for criminal groups is limited. And El Salvador had pretty decent police forces that were able to crack down swiftly and actually follow those orders. In other countries, corruption is a much bigger issue. In countries like Mexico or Colombia, violence is not driven by gangs. It's driven by powerful transnational drug cartels. They're going to remain powerful as long as there's robust drug demand in the United States, in Europe, in Asia, and as long as they can get their hands on weapons.
And he says citizens in other countries in the region are likely to resist any attempt to dismantle democratic norms.
You look at polling questions in Latin America on, for instance, the question, would you be willing to sacrifice democracy for safety? People actually aren't so convinced on that. You know, people in Latin America fought long and hard to live in the democratic political systems they do, and often they value that. Just to name one example, look at Argentina, a country where civil society was hugely important to building democracy, where I'm sure people would not be willing to give up the freedoms that Bukele has taken away from Salvadorans.
The real danger, he says, is that you lose democracy, but don't reduce crime.
Well, what really worries me is that we might see governments try to copy Bukele and not only fail to deliver security, but also erode democracy in the process. So take the case of Ecuador. Ecuador, over the past month, has jailed about 10,000 people. Only 500 of them have legal processes. Now, Ecuador is in a situation where the state needs to do something. Violence is spiraling out of control, but that's a very concerning amount of arrests without charges, without convictions. I think it would be dangerous to fall into the trap of assuming that simply by getting rid of democracy, you're somehow going to magically solve crime.
Part 4. What's the future for Bukele?
Right now, El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele is riding a wave of popular support. But how long can that last? Our fourth witness is Monica Pachon, a political scientist and professor at the University of the Andes in Bogota, Colombia.
I think it is difficult to do this forever. I think he has been able to do it because of his popularity, because he has the constitutional court on his side and the judiciary and the assembly. But it is possible that this changes in the near future because, of course, there are human rights abuses and these may open up a gap where he needs to change his strategy. We saw this in Colombia with the peace process agreement. We saw this in Fujimori's Peru. So he has to consolidate his security program and move on and show new things to the population in order for him to stay in power.
And she says he will need to deliver on his original campaign promise to crack down on corruption in El Salvador.
That's something we cannot actually see, right? Because when you have a president with this level of popularity, there are no checks and balances in the system that are trustworthy for the population. There are less incentives for media to open up, you know, boxes that might show corruption scandals and things of the sort. So it is very difficult for us to understand whether there's ongoing corruption, what are the deals that are being struck behind the back of the population to actually show results.
And what about Bukele himself? How does Monica see his future?
I would say that Nayib Bukele needs to find his successor. And that would be the way to pass in history, not as a dictator, but as the greatest president that he wants to be seen as in the history of El Salvador. Unfortunately, he's in a permanent state of siege. He obviously doesn't care about human rights protocols, and this is not good news for democracy on the long run.
And she's more pessimistic than our third witness about the commitment to democracy among the peoples of the region.
In Latin America, what we have seen is a decay of the democracy sentiment and approval. Most people are happier with a country that allows them, or a president that allows them, to have effective services and prosperity, and they care less about elections. This is not good news, but I do think that it is important for us to understand that democracy doesn't mean the same thing for all people. Procedural democracy for some is important, but for others, the provision of public services and security is more important even than electing their own leadership. I was born in a country with a lot of violence as well, and I understand how people feel. It doesn't mean that I am happy or that I support that. I'm trying to explain how, from the outside, this would look very odd, but from the inside, it would look different.
So to come back to our question, will neighboring countries follow El Salvador's lead on crime? The answer is they probably will, but it may not produce the results they want. Bukele's popularity is off the charts, and plenty of people in Latin America would like that same sense of safety that Salvadorians are now enjoying. But as we've heard, gangs in other parts of the region are more connected, better resourced, and more heavily armed than those in El Salvador. And the danger is that states that try to go down the Bukele route will end up with the worst outcome of all, sacrificing democratic norms, but still finding themselves unable to contain the violence. A final word from our first witness, Carlos Dada, director of the online newspaper El Faro.
Democracy is a very dear thing for people like me. Democracy means nothing to people that lived with a gun pointing their heads, which had the face of gang members extorting them, raping their daughters. That's what was happening in the communities. If you tell these people, we will take this gun off your head, but in exchange of that, we won't have democracy anymore. Democracy has never meant anything to them because democracy never solved any of their most pungent problems. This is a natural thing to say, but the price we are paying for this is very high.
This edition of The Inquiry was presented by me, David Baker, produced by Fahana Hyther, and researched by Matt Toulson. The editor is Tara McDermott, and Nikki Edwards is the technical producer.